Hello again, Friartown. Happy holidays, and for the final time, Happy New Year to all of you out there. I am Chris Torello, joined as always by Daniel James and Danny McNamara. However, prior to ringing in the new year 2013, it was not a great way to end 2012. And we begin today, gentlemen, by talking about Boston College, Brown, Louisville, and unfortunately, DePaul losses. Four straight for the men in black and white. Danny James, your thoughts on those four games?
I think the most critical thing that we took away from this is chemistry. And that comes on both ends of the court. I mean, I did an article on Scout, and I published a similar-sounding article at points on a Friar blog recently. And in both articles, I mentioned how we've started taking more shots since the return of Council and the additions of Siddiqui Johnson and Chris Dunn. But we haven't increased our percentage in shooting, and it's, in fact, gone down because we're taking more shots, but we're not converting. So on offense, that's telling me that more people are trying more things, and we're, you know, trying to spread our offensive flow a bit too much, and no one really knows their role on offense anymore, when before it was just get the ball to Kadeem Batts, get the ball to Bryce Cotton, even get the ball to Lee Goldsboro, because he was, at times, good at scoring. But now it's, you know, do you pass to Council and let him shoot? Do you let Dunn shoot? Do you let Siddiqui post up? Do you let Cotton try to play off the ball? It's just become more of a mess as we try to add these new players, and our competition has increased in talent level. And on defense, it's a similar situation where no one really knows their role. You look at the man-to-man defense, and we're losing each other. You know, the switch off a pick is much slower than it normally is. Our defense in the paint has been atrocious, and our defense on the three has been terrible. And it's not to say that we can't defend the three. It's that we don't know where the responsibility lies, because the assignments keep changing and the expectations keep changing with each addition.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And, you know, it's going to take a lot from Ed Cooley. I think we have to mention him in trying to find that chemistry. And Danny Mack, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, the chemistry issue is, I think, something that a lot of people were expecting right away. Obviously, it can only get better at this point, hopefully. And I think it's just something that the team's going to have to work through while playing these games. It's not like they have this long layoff anymore. So they're just going to have to work through it and make the most out of their practice time in between their travel days, which is something that hopefully they can get done by the heart of the Big East schedule, because it's not getting any easier the rest of the way.
No, it's certainly not getting any easier. And, you know, I mean, let's just quickly really go through it, because Boston College, you guys remember when we were kind of going through the non-conference schedule, kind of determining records and then even kind of predicting the Big East schedule and overall records by the end of March. I think we were I was probably the most hesitant to say we were going to possibly, you know, win up at Boston College. I think what really said it for me was, you know, Danny James came out and said, no, they're bad, we're going to beat them. And for me, it was, we have not always performed well up there in Boston College. We just haven't. We've gone up there and we've lost. Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't as surprising to me. I mean, I thought we should have won the game. I thought we played very selfish the entire game. I thought Bryce Cotton was the only one who was taking the shots he should take, and I just didn't like the flow of the game. And then you move to Brown and Danny James. I mean, bravo to you, sir. You said that was going to be a much more difficult contest than ever, and I'll tell you right now, we are never going back to play at Brown.
Nope.
We're playing at the Dunkin' Donut Center. I understand the reasons behind it, whether financial reasons for, you know, not having to rent the dunk for a game, all of that. We will never, ever go back there again, and that's the end of it. And you know, I mean, Louisville is Louisville. Did we play well? Did we start off on a nice beginning? Yeah, it was nice. But Louisville is one of the best teams in the country, okay? And if it would surprise the hell out of me if they're not in the Elite Eight this year. So that's just my opinion right now. And as for DePaul, I mean,
yeah, I mean,
shades of Keno Davis.
Yeah. DePaul go ahead, Dan.
Go ahead, Dan. I mean, BC is bad. I mean, it's not like, I still think we are a better team than they are, but they just played, as you said, more unselfishly. They had so many threes that were just, I mean, it's just like they're taking pictures while these guys are shooting threes. So it's just it's something that obviously Coach Cooley was not happy about, because he knows that we were a better team than those two teams, and we didn't play like it. And I mean, the Louisville game, I really don't think we played all that bad, all things considered. They are, like you said, like Cooley said, he thinks that they're the best team in the country right now. But it's something that game right away was, I think it was a little, the first 5 minutes were like, wow, can we keep this up? But then, I think Council got a little out of control. And, I mean, he's been criticized many times the past few days, but he's just trying to get his legs back, and obviously he wasn't himself. He's still not himself, and it wasn't the player that he was last year against Louisville.
Well, let me first address, if you don't mind, the Vincent Council point, and then I'd like to mention the Boston College and how that game almost foreshadowed what we could have seen at Brown. Who coaches Boston College? Steve Donahue. Where did he coach prior to Boston College?
Colgate.
Princeton.
Cornell. He coached at Cornell.
Nobody knew.
Cornell.
Yeah, and the answer is things you both don't know. No, I'm just kidding. But let me just preface that. Vincent Council, he goes out there, and I personally know he is running things on his own. He is just making it up as he has gone out there these games since he's returned. And what does that do for someone like a Siddiqui Johnson who can't learn the plays right now? That's why he sat against Louisville. You know, people want to speculate about grades or poor cards. No, he was fine. He's trying to learn the system still. And what's going on is Vincent Council's out there almost kind of doing it blue collar, and that doesn't work. You have to stick within the half court offense, because guys like Dunn, guys like Siddiqui, who I think are both very talented players, more so than almost every single person on our current available roster, you cannot tell me that Vincent Council, a senior, is allowed to just go up and down as he pleases and leave these guys in the dark. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, it works against lower competition, but like it's not going to work the rest of the way. Especially, he can't play that selfishly and expect for good things to happen. He's not that type of explosive player. I can understand if you have, say, we were just talking about him prior to the show, Kyrie Irving. Sure, go out there and let him do what he does, and he'll make everyone else around him a much better player. But Vince is not, with the other players on the team, he can't do that right now. So it'll be interesting to see what reins Cooley has on him and if he decides to bring them in.
Yeah, let's hope so. Now, Steve Donahue's the head coach up at Boston College, and as you both correctly guessed, he did coach at Cornell prior to coming to Boston College. Now, what do Ivy League teams do better than any other league, any other teams in this country? They shoot
the three.
They get a bunch of pampered white kids, tall and small, and they shoot the three inside. They shoot it in the corner. They shoot it at the top of the perimeter, and they make the threes. They are so good at doing this, and it's like, okay, well, Steve Donahue almost has this kind of system in place where they can make their shots and they're making long-range jumpers inside and outside of the three. What makes you think Brown won't do that?
Brown is actually the leading three-point shooting team for the Ivy League. They came in when we played them. We were still number three in the country for defensive three-point shots, and they were the top shooting three-point team in the Ivy League, and they killed us.
And guess what, guys? Real quickly, Danny, sorry. They could have been the worst shooting team in the Ivy League from three, and it still would have been good, because that's what the Ivy League does. Ugh. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard to kind of put it into words, like, what we could have done better, because obviously there's so much that we could have done those two games.
Yeah,
I'm getting a little tired of John Rook. I mean, I love John Rook, and I love Joe Hassett, but every time I hear the stat that the Friars are one of the best in 3-point defense, I think is what it is. The statistic, it's almost
a lot
like
of misses.
Please throw that out the window, because Mississippi State, I don't know what people were telling them up to that game. Yes, you can make the three. Even if you miss, it's almost like it's a make. Like, I don't know what was going through their mind. So that was almost embarrassing, that game.
Yeah,
they made a make or miss game the miss game. But I think that with that one guy in BC, Heckman, he was just – I mean, he's a, he plays a prototypical like three player, but he was playing the four the entire game, and there was just no that like Danny pointed out earlier. There was just the rotation and the help on defense was just brutal. I mean, they were slow. It kind of looked as if we were expecting them to miss all these shots, like our previous opponents were. And then when they started going in, you could see the frustration on Cooley's face, like, okay, guys, mm-hmm. you're going to just stand there. But, yeah, I mean, with the Brown game, you kind of did see it coming, because they had 6 days after we played BC to kind of say, oh, wait, if we can just swing the ball around and find the open man, and yeah. they're not going to rotate. So we can take it. If we take 33s, we're bound to hit 9 or 10, which is going to kill these guys. So, mm-hmm.
And we bit on every single one. I don't know if you guys noticed that. Ugh. But every pump fake, we had someone jumping yeah. in the air. And that last shot, literally, like, the Halpern or McGonagall, I forget who hit it. He was so close to me, I could have pet him. Like, he was right there. And I saw it happen. I saw him raise his body up like he's going to take the shot. And it was either Fortune or Henton who jumped up to block it, and he just dropped down, stepped to the mm-hmm. side, and put mm-hmm. it up and hit it. And as soon as yeah. as soon as our defender left the air, I said, "This game's over. This is the dagger."
I also want to say this. I know that we're talking about, you know, chemistry being a big issue, and you know, Danny, you'll remember I wrote in that Friar blog roundtable. I wrote a dictionary at the bottom, but in there somewhere around section E, I wrote a whole thing about Siddiqui Johnson and I was afraid he was going to play like the old Kadeem Batts, somebody who would come in if you didn't give him the ball 5 seconds into the half court possession, he was going to mope and bitch. And what did he do against DePaul? What did he do every single time down that court? He raised his arm up and said, "Give me the ball." If you didn't give him the ball, what did he do? The second that ball went back up to the middle of the perimeter, he just would lollygag in that paint for about 10 seconds and then think, maybe they'll give me the ball. And then he'd shoot the ball when you gave it to him. And it was terrible. So it's not just a matter of chemistry, but also identity a little bit, because Siddiqui's trying to find himself, and he needs to learn that, hey, I have to be tougher than this. And Henton the same thing. Henton needs to know, you know, no matter if I'm a three or a four in the lineup, I have to be me. Same thing with Fortune. I think having that earlier system where it was six guys in the rotation, where you were able to kind of, okay, I'm going to take my threes, I'm going to stay out here. Well, now it's a little bit different, because these guys have to adjust to the likes of a Council and a Dunn coming back. We were all excited with the Colgate game, but now we're all very cautious heading into Syracuse coming into the dunk.
I'll tell you, one of the biggest things that's going to have to change, and, you know, we've talked about the defense, we're going to end up talking about the offense, but I, from DePaul alone, and this has been a bigger theme since they came back, it's turnovers. We had almost a 1-to-2 assist to turnover ratio, and that, to me, is disgusting. When you have last year, the leading assist player in the Big East, in Vincent Council, you have, you know, someone who in his first collegiate game, coming off an injury after 6 months, set a record in Providence College history with 13 assists. And yet, the last game, I have the box score right in front of me, against DePaul. Chris Dunn, 1 assist, 6 turnovers. Vincent Council, 6 assists, 8 turnovers. So not as bad, but then, you know, within the first minute of the second half, we had 3 turnovers that DePaul was able to convert into 4 points that put him into an 11-point lead. And from there on out, the second half was mostly a clown show of them gaining up to a 22-point lead and us just clawing our way within the last 10 minutes and, you know, just trying to keep it within dignity of losing. Mm-hmm. DePaul had 20 points off turnovers alone.
Yeah, I think at the end of the game, you could kind of see we were playing more freely. It wasn't so we weren't so tense with everything, and I think that that obviously can't happen every game. But with the turnovers, it's just careless. It's just especially the one I can really point to was in the backcourt where Kadeem got the rebound and was looking for an outlook past the Council, and it just kind of half-assed it to him, and it was just stolen so easily. And it's just like those little things, they're just that can change a game, and that can swing, that can make a 4-point swing just like that. It's just it's just things that it clearly won't stand for. And it's just
and it's also free throws too, because we were in the bonus with I think so much time left, and the announcers kept talking about it when they could get our guys' players' names right. That was actually nice for a change. But these guys, we couldn't make free throws, and that is, it just bothers the hell out of me when that happens. So to be addressed. And the thing is how do you address all this with such a short time? Yeah. And when are you burning these guys out? You know, at some point you're pushing them too hard. They're not going to keep listening. Like it's tough. It's Ed Cooley's in a very, very, very tough position. And I don't know if we're giving him enough of a break. I don't want to say, you know,
and when he has to get ready for that Syracuse zone that he has to kind of teach on the fly to Chris Dunn, who's going to be thrown into that. Go ahead.
I guarantee you, you're going to see, just like Ray Hall, you're going to see either Siddiqui or Kofani or Johnson. They're going to have a big man right there at that, in that little half circle there at the free throw line, standing there trying to break it and then catching guys on backdoor cuts. It's not going to work. They're going to need to find a way around that. And Providence will hang with Syracuse through the first half. And I know we're going to get into those four games, but it's going to be interesting. So
yeah, and speaking of Ray Hall, he did just like my status on the Knicks game tonight and the Notre Dame game tonight. So thank you, Big Ray.
He stayed so long, we named a building after him.
Now, here's something, because, you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, the defense, and I think, to an extent, you got to shoulder that on Cooley, but you also realize that, like, Cooley has made these adjustments. Like, you look at it, like, okay, they're making a switch, now they're driving into the lane, and they're making layups, and you're trying to adjust your big man, well, now they're driving in and making the pass to the post player who's now completing. So, I mean, to an extent, it shoulders on Cooley, but the offense, I feel, is entirely on the burden of the players. And you look at a player like Josh Fortune, who shot 0 of 7 in... What did he play? 17 minutes? I mean, the guy couldn't make a shot to save his life in the game against DePaul. And that, when you're billed as a shooter, is a problem. But what do you guys think? Do you think, because I personally blame the players for their inability to convert.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have off-night shooting. That's just the nature of the game. But I feel he's just the type of player that thrives so much more when he's just standing there and someone looks for him. When he has to create his own shot off the dribble, he looks like he's forcing it almost. When he's sitting in the corner just waiting for it, it seems so much more natural to him. So I mean, I think that's just something. I mean, he's gonna have the freedom to keep shooting, obviously, because he's one of the few players that we have that can score like he can. And it's just something that I think this coaching staff has to work through, and they have to make sure that these young players aren't going to get their hopes down, which I think going into the gauntlet of the Big East schedule is going to be a challenge, especially with what happened in the last four games.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, fans are frustrated right now, and I know that fans are really kind of even starting to second guess whether Providence should have come out and said, yeah, we're going to give an extension to Ed Cooley. I'm going to tell you right now, and I think you two will agree with me, sign him as soon as you can. Sign him tomorrow. Because this guy, in less than 2 years, has brought in 6 top 100 recruits. 6. Okay? Now, we can argue over Siddiqui Johnson. I know scouts Rich Corin, who I trust so much, he even says, you know, maybe he's not a top 100 talent. But that's okay, because he was ranked, and we can put him in there. And I just think that right now, Friar fans need to calm down. They need to keep the faith. And, you know, these next 4 or 5 games, they just have to think that maybe things are going to start clicking like it did last year with that Louisville game. And I think we're more talented this year. I know some people will say that we're not as talented as last year. I think we're a lot more talented than last year's team.
I agree with that. I think that we've had addition by subtraction, and then we've also had addition by players. And I think the two of those are going to make a difference in the long term. But you can't expect... You know, you can't expect to throw in a senior point guard, a freshman point guard, and a sophomore center and expect it to just all be dandelions. And we were all a bit optimistic when we started winning those games with so few players, and, you know, we were relying solely on just this team grinding it out night in and night out, and we were seeing the success, and we were just thinking, you know, imagine what's going to happen when we add these players. And we kind of, you know, we didn't judge how long of a process it really takes. I mean, you know, everyone talks about the soft schedule at the beginning of the season. We have that so players can mesh and players can learn how to adapt to one another in a game situation. They didn't have that. You know, they didn't have that opportunity. Even someone like Josh Fortune, you know, had the opportunity to mesh with Bryce Cotton, but now he has to learn a whole different point guard. And that makes a difference in his game, and that's going to affect his game. And likewise, it's going to affect Council having to trust this freshman shooting guard who's playing in a small forward position. It's you know, we underestimated it, I feel. And I feel that in time it's going to be okay. And right now is just we're just dealing with a bad stretch, but there's no reason to get eccentric about it.
Now, let me just say this, and I know that we all remember the UMass game. We lost at the buzzer, but how proud of, and yeah, you were frustrated, but how proud were you of that team at the time to lose 77-75? To put forth that effort. I remember Kadeem Batts was playing like a beast that night because he looked so forward to that game. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very proud of that team. But you know what? Had we gotten all those guys back for a UMass game or that type of a game, I think we're having this conversation a lot earlier in the season. Yeah. I really do. And we're frustrated a lot earlier because the talent is there. And that's why we're frustrated. We believe the talent is there. We believe we can win. And we really want to make a mark with what we believe is the final year of the Big East.
The biggest gripe I've heard about Chris Dunn is that he's a McDonald's All-American who just isn't living up to expectations. And to that, you got to say, what expectations did you have for him to begin with? Did you expect him to, you know, have a triple-double every night? Or did you expect him to just be a freshman who has an incredibly huge upswing and incredibly high growth potential and who just needs to grow into the college game?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously many reasons to be optimistic, and I mean this is our team, and for many of us it's the school we went to, so there's reason to be frustrated when things don't go well. But at the same time, I think we have to realize that right now we're playing in what is the most historic basketball conference, and we have to just take each game like it's a new one. Obviously it is, but I mean this team is going to have some problems making a postseason tournament this season. So just go into each game thinking, okay, I want these players to just do their job, mm-hmm. to do what their role tells them to do, yeah. and focus on the player development right now and where each player can be at come the end of the year, because they're just going to get better. I mean, the coaching staff we have is a great staff. I mean, the what Ed Cooley has done, the people that he's surrounded this team with, it's just only going to get better in the future. And even though we're losing games right now, and the one thing that I'm frustrated is if the players have their heads down and they're not trying and they're not hustling. And I really didn't see that for much of the DePaul game until the end of the game, where we really started to get on the ground for loose balls and really hustle. And I think that's just what I'm hoping for this Big East season, to see that effort and to see that tenacity that Ed Cooley obviously wants his players to show. And as fans, we just have to be happy and appreciate that. And I know that we may win more than 4 or 5 games in the league, if that. And it's many of us are not going to accept that, but I hopefully most of us realize that this is not your typical Big East season for us. This year may be the last year that we really stink or don't win these games, because they're coming. I mean, I know we don't want to hear that, but the wins are coming. Chris Dunn is a fantastic basketball player, and I know, Chris, you've seen him in practice. He is a special talent, and the announcers say it every game. You can just see it. He has glimpses of things like, wow, did he just do that? Such raw talent that you can't say that about many, many college basketball mm-hmm. players. Mm-hmm. So I just think that we just have to focus mm-hmm. on player development this year, and hopefully they play together as a team and trust one another and see what can happen. I mean, obviously
we're always good for a few upsets. And I don't think there's one team that's going to say, "Oh, I want to go play Providence." No, you don't. That's no one's saying that. I mean, I was just listening to on SNY earlier today. Coach Boeheim was talking about how they have Council and Cotton, and that's always spells doom, especially for his zone, because they always have the ability to knock some shots down and make things interesting, and especially with what Siddiqui hopefully will bring and Kadeem. I think it's gonna be a fun Big East season. I don't think we should really harp on a few losses, even though they were bad losses. I believe Ed Cooley would be the first one to tell you that, and I think that the players will realize that, and hopefully they'll get their acts together and play as a team, and hopefully that's all we can ask for.
Let me ask you guys something. What was the worst loss of these four games?
Oh, DePaul.
DePaul?
DePaul, without question.
What about you?
I would say DePaul, too, just because I didn't see that in the middle of the game. It was just kind of like going through the motions.
Yeah, there was nothing. There was nothing. There was nothing there to be had. There was nothing to be desired. And the Louisville game was expected. DePaul was not expected. It was pure pathetic. It was plain and simple.
You know, I would agree. DePaul, I would give an honorable mention to Boston College just because of the way they played at BC. Yeah. It was wasn't as reminiscent of how they played at DePaul, but it was still pretty bad.
And Danny McNamara just said, you hope it's a fun season. Well, let's take a look at the next four games, and it's probably not going to be a fun start. Syracuse rolls into the Dunkin' Donut Center this Wednesday night, or 7 o'clock tip-off. And Syracuse, one of the best teams in the Big East, one of the best teams in the nation. Follow that up with a Sunday game at Seton Hall. That's a noontime down in Newark, New Jersey at The Rock. And then they'll follow that up headed down to our nation's capital, Georgetown. That'll be a slugfest. Big Ten basketball always. And then it's Villanova right after that, and it's worth mentioning Pittsburgh at home as well. So that's the next four or five games, three at home, two on the road in the middle there. So, gentlemen, what are we thinking?
Well, right off the bat, Syracuse is – it's nothing easy. I mean, playing arguably the two best teams in the conference, the first two out of three games is – those schedule makers don't like us too much. But it's – It's gonna be interesting to see. I mean, they are highly one of the most talented teams in the league. I mean, Michael Carter Williams, local kid from Providence, is a world of a talent. He can do everything. And
Danny, if you don't mind me jumping in on Michael Carter Williams, I want Ed Cooley to show those kids, his kids, the Temple game. I want him to show them what Michael Carter Williams wants to do and how selfish he can be. Because if he does that, I think we're in business with trying to stop him. I really do. I think Michael Carter Williams is the one person that, to me, almost is kind of like what Vince Council can beat us. He can be the death nail for us. You know, he can allow a team like a Temple or even us, a Providence, like you said, to stick around in a game. Their mistakes can allow us to stay in it. And I think Michael Carter Williams' game against Temple is a blueprint for us.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think hopefully that. I know Ricky grew up playing with him, so anything that he can offer to his game, I mean, he's, I don't know, 6'5", 6'4", point guard that can really do everything on the court. He sees the floor well, but like you said, he can get selfish and try to take the game into his own hands, which obviously Boeheim is we'll keep telling him not to do because they have many other talented players around him. I mean, Sutherland and C.J. Fair are just weapons on the corner, and I mean,
they're going to take the three. You have to defend the three, and that's basically it. I mean, we have to defend the three. If they beat you down low, we can actually say, well, you know, you have Kadeem, you have Siddiqui, you have, I'll even say Kofani, Christ help me. But, I mean, you know, and you have to be willing to live with that. But I want to see better perimeter defense against Syracuse. And you have to take that into a team like Seton Hall and even Georgetown. Now, Georgetown, I think, is a more 50-45 type of battle for you there. And even Villanova and Pittsburgh, I think they're going to be a little more low scoring than people expect. Let's face it. And we're basically being outscored. The average is 81.5 for the victor to our, I believe it's like 67.5. So it's a 14-point difference right there. Let's keep it in the 70s. Let's try and see if we can make a game out of it. And let's be in it all the way till the end. If you lose it in the final 2 minutes, so be it. But put forth an effort that you're going to be proud of. You know, let's go out there and let's just have a lot of pride and let's have some fun with it too. What the hell do we have to lose?
Nothing.
There you go.
Nothing. So.
Okay.
except for the hope of many fans. But jokes. But no, I think after the Syracuse game, I mean, just to, if you want to move on and talk about Seton Hall real fast, I think Seton Hall is a very winnable game, even though it's on the road. I've seen them a few times this year, and I think that's definitely a game where it could really, really get us rolling, because looking after that, I mean, Georgetown's an anemic offensive team, but like you said, they're a slugfest on defense. So
yeah, you say they're an anemic offensive team. They make the teams they play anemic. They really do. They make you fall asleep, and if you just stay awake long enough, you might be able to punch them in the mouth a few times. And I'd love to get a win against Georgetown. I can't remember the last time we beat Georgetown. I don't think they beat them under my undergrad years, but
We had them a couple times and just couldn't.
We had that Marshawn Brooks 43-point game.
We had the Marshawn Brooks, and then a few years before that, our sophomore year when we had the Whammy game, and the Curry went off in that game too, I recall, and we ran out of steam. He was wearing the number 10 that game because he got blood on his jersey or something. Remember that? Or they forgot his jersey or something?
I'd love blood to get on one of our players' jerseys. It would mean they're human, because I'd love to see some emotion out of our players. That's another thing I'd love to see in these next four or five games.
I just want to hear from both of you. What out of those? I mean, obviously Syracuse is going to be an extremely tough game to get a win. Out of Seton Hall, Georgetown, and Nova, which game do you think we have the best chance of pulling off?
I was afraid we were going to have to give a record in the next four or five games. I'm not going to do that.
No,
but I will say this. I think, I'm with Danny. I think Nova, yeah. I think Seton Hall has always been a little bit of a tough place for us to go down there. It's a Sunday
side. Yeah.
It's always been a bone on our side. Georgetown's very tough, but you know what? I think we can win any of them. I really think on any given day, we can beat any of these teams. Would it shock me if we lose all of them? No. Would it shock me if we win all of them? Probably. But I mean, it would actually probably be pleasant if we were to win two or three of these. It really would be nice. And you know what? I'll take each game like it would like a football schedule. You try and be 1-0 each week. Yeah. Try and be 1-0 for each game, and just look at each game as a little mini season and see what happens. So focus on Syracuse. Try and build off of that. And then guess what? You have Thursday, Friday, Saturday to get ready for a Sunday afternoon game right there in beautiful Newark, New Jersey, the armpit of the world.
So. I know a lot of people say that there's never such thing as a good loss, but
there isn't,
I think if we play Syracuse well, I think that'll give the team a lot of confidence going into the next few games, saying, listen, we can play together. We have the players to do it. So let's just go out there and just have fun and just play our game. Just not try to get out of control. And
well, let's be careful with that confidence. I'd rather it be hunger than confidence, because that can be misconstrued. I've seen Friar teams that have had moral victories through losses, and then they go play a team like a Seton Hall, who they should beat. I believe firmly we should beat Seton Hall every single year. And that's just my opinion. And we will go and lose. We won't just lose. We'll get shit on, okay? And so that's what I'm saying.
That's only the biggest tournament.
I don't want more. Excuse me. Greedy Peterson's not here anymore. 38-19 ain't happening, all right? So I don't want to hear it. But I just don't want to see us get complacent from playing well against Syracuse. I want us to think, damn, we could have won this game. Damn it, let's go win in New Jersey. And then, damn it, let's go win in Georgetown. And let's come home and let's prove to our fans when we get them, Villanova, Pittsburgh, we're going to win those games. I want to see some hunger. I want to see some fire. Guys, we all know what we're going to talk about next with the Big East and everything and realignment. I just want to see this team in all that is left of the Big East as it is. Louisville, Syracuse, Pittsburgh. I want to see us go out there and try and make a statement, not just for us, but for the other six teams that are going out on a limb with basketball. That's what I want.
Yeah. Hey, that's one good thing that about DePaul, at least, is, you know, we lost to a team that we're going to be playing with for a while now. So, hey, help them build their resume, I guess. I don't know.
Silver lining, right? Yeah, that's a real bronze lining, if you ask me, right there. Yeah, finishing third out of three. Yeah, beautiful. Love it. Gentlemen, let's move into realignment, because that's where I really want to dive in, shall we say, into this. And I think it's for all the negativity that's been surrounding Friartown the last two, 3 weeks, if this isn't a, if this if the news out of ESPN, out of Scout, it's getting pretty exciting, guys. I think it's pretty safe to say we will not. The Big East is going to be kaput as of July 1st.
Yeah, the word is that we're done. We're out July 1, 2013. It's going to be basketball only, and it's we're either going to have the name or we're going to have a new name. But you know, we're going to have new teams. We're going to have new culture.
And new TV deals.
New TV deals that's going to kick ESPN's balls off from what I've been reading about this Fox deal or whatever. If that
I like Fox One. I like it a lot. Yeah. I like it a lot. It's a great chance to kind of see. And I actually would love them to take advantage of NBC Sports a little bit, because I think that was fun to kind of get a game like a Brown game on there. So yeah. I think that's more of a chance for national attention and then you know, of course, you'd love to see a CBS game come in from a non-conference game or ESPN, just because. But you know, this is, I think it's a great start for us, and you know, but at the same time, it's very sad. It is very, very sad. And you know, someone like me who's grown up in Connecticut, and you know, I mean, I grew up, all I knew was UConn and Big East basketball. That was it. So, I mean, it's a little sad, and obviously with Louisville and Syracuse, and I don't know if you guys read the ESPN article, the comments made by Jim Boeheim. He said, you know, the ACC is pretty stable right now. Jim Boeheim's probably going to coach in the ACC because he thinks it's a stable conference. And that was an article that was on ESPN. You know, he thinks it's more stable than what the Big East has to offer. He said, you know, Houston, SMU, I mean, come on. Can't even name all the teams in the conference now. And it's true. You can't.
No, but, I couldn't.
So I think it's a good thing that we are taking this leap. But like, yeah. I said, it is very sad right now. It is very, very sad. But I'm very proud of Providence. I'm very proud of Seton Hall, Marquette, DePaul, all of them. Very proud of them.
I wouldn't say it's sad. Uh-oh. Well, did we just lose Danny McNamara? We temporarily lost Danny McNamara, but we'll be back with him shortly. In the meantime, failed user not online. I think he lost internet. I don't know. When he gets back, okay. We'll add him. In the meantime, I think it's sad, or I don't think it's sad, and I'll tell you why.
Please do.
everyone made their bed out of greed. This all came from just a desire for more and a hunger to, you know, if they could get a little more in their TV deal or just a little more exposure or this or that, and you know, it's sad. In a fan sense, but it's not.
Yeah, that's
sad.
What I'm looking at. That's what,
yeah.
I'm looking at.
All right,
at.
Then
yeah.
Yeah, then it is sad. I just think it's brilliant. I think I was talking to a bunch of fans, and this is the first high major basketball only conference we're ever going to see. This was not a thing before we decided to make it one, and that's awesome. That means we're taking the initiative, and we're not just going to say we're not going to continue suckling on the teat of college football, and you know, just hoping to hang on. Like a termite or something, and we're not going to try to just accept our fate as a mid-major. We're going to go out and do something different and do something new and make it our own. And I think that's brilliant. I think it's why we're going to be adding the high-caliber basketball-only teams that we're going to be adding, and we're going to be talking about that. And I think that it's part of the reason why there's going to be such an appeal for a contract, a TV contract, is because it's something new and it's something marketable and it's something that the public hasn't seen before. You know, you're not going to, you know.
Yep, no, you're right about that. And, yeah. You know, it's probably going to be a 10-team league, maybe even 12.
Yep.
So that's going to be good. You're going to have Butler, Xavier, I believe it's Dayton. To get,
yep,
you to 10. And then I've heard that if we do make it 12, it's Creighton and St. Louis.
Yeah.
So I think I have a little reservation over St. Louis, but you know what? You take a team like DePaul in the Big East, and you know they can win some games. So you take a team like St. Louis. I think their structure and foundation from the late great Rick Majerus is there. So you know what? I'm really happy with this move. But like I said, Danny, for me it's sad. Now USF, I feel bad for.
Yep.
I don't feel bad for Cincinnati, because you've said it perfectly to me in conversations that Cincinnati did the same thing UConn did. They tried to do everything they could to get out. But I will say this about Cincinnati. At least they have some clout.
Yeah.
At least they have a good football program to say, hey, we can join ACC or we can do something and give you something.
They have they have the market, too. They have the Ohio market, so they could go to the ACC. They could go to the Big Ten, the Big 12, whatever.
Mm-hmm. But let me say this about UConn. Because now I'm really annoyed. I'm sad because I grew up a UConn fan and I was very, very tempted to go to UConn, except half my high school went there and I don't like anybody in my high school, so I came to Providence and I've fallen in love with Providence College and I'm gonna be a Friar fan the rest of my life. And you know, I've tried to look at the UConn side of things. But what really has annoyed me is a few things. One is that Gino Auriemma, and we've all seen the article by now, it's been posted by loyal scout posters about him saying good riddance to the Big East. Gino, you're right, good riddance, because you and your team, for all the good that you've done for women's college basketball, there has not been anyone except for maybe Villanova occasionally and Notre Dame and possibly St. John's occasionally that can beat your team. So you basically can now go and try and say good riddance, and you can go play somewhere where you might actually have to be competitive. You might actually have to try and beat some of those women's teams that will actually beat you. So now go try and actually get out from underneath the carpet that is the Big East for you. Okay? Jim Calhoun. You know, he loved the Big East. He'll talk all day about Jimmy Walker and Dave Gavitt, and God bless him for saying all that. These two gentlemen are considered God and Jesus Christ. Depending on who you talk to, they're interchangeable here in Connecticut, Danny. And let me tell you something. You want to tell me that you're going to allow the UConn Husky football program to dictate what you two do, and yet you're mad at these seven Catholic schools? Get the hell out of here. I don't want to hear it from them. I don't want to hear that UConn is UConn. What's wrong with UConn? UConn has a football team. And like you said, Danny, they have decided that it is about a little more money. And that school president, she calls herself a school president, to let herself go and basically stand on the street corner and say, we need something, we need money. So you know what? That's number one. And I'm going to finally end with number two. My best friend is a UConn graduate. And he said to me, if you don't take UConn in your new basketball program, then it's a crap conference. And you know what I have to say to him is, you chose football over basketball. You have gold in your hands, and you're putting shit above it. So UConn, you chose your path, and with the arrogance and the hubris that you have to do this. So you know what? Get out. Get out and think you're special. Take about 30 regular season Big East championships. Take God knows how many tournament titles. And take the combination from what Jim Calhoun has done with 3 national championships and what I believe is 7 from Gino Auriemma, and get the hell out. You don't deserve to be in this conference because you've never deserved to be in the first place.
Wow. Wow. The hate. Holy shit, dude. Wow. All right. Well, yeah. I don't really know how to. Wow.
Was that wrong? Or was I wrong?
I mean, you're right. You're passionate. Holy shit. Yeah, I got. Whew. I mean, I gotta. Oh, wow. That was a lot of hate. Do you think that hurt UConn in terms of application, or do you think that it was just something else? Because I personally think it hurt him. I think it showed that there was no loyalty and no convictions in a school where, you know, you need to play. This is poker. You need to hide your hand and you need to play it wisely and you'll come out on top. And they didn't do that.
Well, you just said it perfectly. The way they did it just really kind of hurt them. And I mean, I can go back to News Channel 8, and I'm sure, you know, there's people on Scout who will listen to this, Greg CT and a bunch of people who are from Connecticut, WTNH, you know, CBS Channel 3, all these people with their sports buzz. I mean, they live for UConn the same way NBC 10 and you know, Fox 12 here in Providence, they live for the Friars. And the fact is they were going giddy over the fact that we're probably joining the ACC. And then it was like a funeral the next day. I mean, it's ridiculous. Now, and I want to just say this. UConn is a terrific, terrific academic school. And it is the best public university in New England. And God bless what basketball did, because the funds that came into that school helped them to improve their academics. It's the truth. I don't want to hear that it didn't. And I have three friends. I have a bunch of friends, and I got three family members who are graduating from that school or have graduated from that school. And it's going to do wonders for so many people. And I'm a big believer in state schools. I'm a big believer in state funded money going there. Having said all that, to hell with them and to hell with their football program. It's terrible. Like I said before, it's not just the school. It's this. It's almost like this, though, Danny. You know how New England fans are with Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. If they don't win the Super Bowl, it's a failure.
Oh yeah, we had that conversation last night. That wasn't too fun.
it was very fun. But the whole point, you lost to a kid with a 504 plan and Eli Manning twice. But the fact is that you have Tom Brady and New England, and they have made it such a custom for you to win. We are going to win every single year. We're going to win the AFC East. We're going to make a joke out of it. And then we're going to go and we're probably going to get to the AFC Championship game. Fact is UConn has done that. UConn has said, we're going to probably in women's basketball be in the Final Four every single year. We are probably with men's basketball going to be at least in the semifinals of the tournament in Madison Square Garden. And then on top of that, we're probably going to be in the fight for the Sweet 16 and et cetera, because it's harder to win in men's basketball than it is women's basketball with all the draft and all that stuff. And you know what? God bless them for the expectations. But the fans did exactly what the school did. They didn't stay humble. They didn't stay excited about it. They're just sitting in limbo, and I'd love to know how it feels. I'd love to know how it feels. And I love it. Personally, I love it. Never thought I'd say it because I always loved UConn growing up. I always went to UConn Day at the Governor's Mansion. I'll tell you right now, I'm fucking thrilled.
Wow. All right. A lot of our questions this week. We usually do the Twitter questions, and if you ever have a question, tweet us. My handle is TheWarriorFryer on Twitter. So you can just tweet us or use the hashtag FryerPod, and we usually check that for questions. And we're going to start posting our agendas on Fryer Blog. And, you know, if I could just take a quick time out and mention that while Dave is on hiatus from Fryer Blog, so he is the original Fryer Blogger, he's the founder, I will still be posting on there pretty routinely. I'll be doing all the pregame stuff, the postgame stuff. I'm going to start trying to do a little bit more in terms of, you know, columns and features and all that to keep the content flowing. And I'm going to work with the other writers to try and, you know, really make sure that Fryer Blog continues to be one of the best resources on the web for Fryer fans everywhere. So I'm going to continue to carry that torch while Dave is out indefinitely. So you'll be able to see the agendas for each podcast there before we record them, and you'll be able to post questions on there in the comment section. But we did have, and I got to give a shout out to this fan. I think you'll agree, Cooley World Order. I mean, I don't know where the hell this guy came from, but holy shit, he's all about it. He is just like he takes the best of the old 90s wrestling and 80s wrestling and adds it to PC basketball. I think you'll agree, Chris. This guy is just the man. Like, I don't know who you are, Cooley World Order, but God bless you and the CWO.
Whenever you want a beer, just come and meet us. I mean, seriously, this guy, you're in.
You have earned every beer that we can afford to buy you. And he wants to know, because part of the reason I used to be the Warrior Fryer is because I would paint my face in the black and white and have the school crest on it, and that was, you know, the war paint. And he wants to know if I'm going to wear the war paint as Sting, the wrestler, for the NWO. So, yes, I will do it. I don't know which game I'll do it, but we'll work it out. It'll probably be a game where I don't have to do a press conference after, but we will figure it out. And, you know, props to you. Keep doing what you're doing, buddy. And that's it. We will be back after either the Villanova or the Pitt game. As always, you can find me on Fryer Blog, on Twitter, on Scout, on anywhere that there's PC basketball fans, you can find me. Trinity Brewhouse, I'm always there before the games. Chris, any last words?
Just keep the faith, keep it going, and, you know, just we're in a good place. We're in a good place for the conference. We're in a good place with a head coach and, you know, bigger, brighter things. And, you know, I know people are really anxious. I just want to make this final comment. I'm going to put it at 80% that Ricky Lito's back next year. So if there's any final word on that, I think it's 80% right now.
A lot of people curious about that. Yes, we still believe that Lito will be back, and just – you know, for now, whether or not he's back next year, that's next year. For now, he's in the black and white. He's one of ours. And as far as I'm concerned, he deserves all the support. Daniel Paul, a.k.a. Danny McNamara, wants us to say that he got abducted by someone who doesn't like him very much. So that's where he went, apparently. Personally, I think he just needs a new computer.
All that porn.
Yeah, all the, it's all the gigabytes upon gigabytes of porn that that kid watches. All right, we'll see you next time.
All right, fire up chips.
Fire up chips.